This is The Pulse, stories about the people and places at the heart of health and science. I'm Maiken Scott. This story is from our episode, The Science of Love. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts. When love goes wrong, it can be incredibly painful.
I just thought I was insane. Like, I thought I had lost my mind.
I couldn't even get away from it when I was asleep. I would still dream about the same things and wake up and then have to live my day feeling like that, too.
It was on my mind all the time and like just on my heart heavily all the time.
And when you're in the throes of that pain, it's hard to picture a way out. You'd give anything for relief. So what can science tell us about heartbreak? And is there a potential cure? Reporter Jed Slayman looked into it.
You can learn a lot about love and heartbreak from voles. They look a bit like a cross between a mouse and a hamster, and they're monogamous. Most animals are not.
In mammals, only about 5% of species form these long-term bonds. It's kind of rare.
Larry Young studies voles at his Emory University lab to understand the neurobiology behind social behavior. Voles have something like love, and it's very cute.
Within a day after they mate, they prefer to spend their time just sitting next to each other, touching each other, what we call huddling, facing in the same direction and perfectly still.
Their version of heartbreak is also kind of cute, but also desperately sad.
A vole that is bonded or has been with a partner and then the partner has been taken away, if you put them in a beaker of water for a few minutes, it tends to just float. If you hold them up by their tail, they just hang there. They show the signs of despair.
They just give up on life, basically. It's not worth it without her. But for voles, at least, there is a cure for a broken heart.
Oxytocin.
It's a naturally occurring hormone.
If at the moment that the partner goes away, we infuse a little bit of oxytocin into the brain, it's as if they'd never lost their partner at all.
Back to carefree bachelor voles. Lots of mammals produce oxytocin, including humans.
When a mother is getting ready to have birth, her brain releases oxytocin, it goes to the uterus begins to contract, and that's what labor is.
Then, after delivery, oxytocin boosts the salience of the mother's perception of her newborn. It's like taking a fuzzy TV signal and turning it to 4K.
And that causes the brain to pay very close attention to the details, the smells, the face, all the different little attributes of the baby.
It's all brilliant and beautiful. Even the ugliest babies are gorgeous in their mother's eyes. They bond. And the same oxytocin hormone is produced by dad as well.
You're such a pretty boy.
Turns out in a few species that have evolved monogamy, or this pair bonding, the same molecule that is causing other mothers to bond with their babies are now causing the parents to bond with each other.
Oxytocin is the first of three chemicals that essentially create love. There's also dopamine, the feel-good, cocaine-y neurotransmitter, and vasopressin, another hormone. In animals like voles and humans that form monogamous bonds, these three have matching receptors in the addiction centers of the brain. Those depressed, floating voles, the ones hanging listlessly by their tails, they're in withdrawal. It's because of a stress hormone, CRF.
It really gets loaded when the animals form a bond, but it's not released. It's just loaded, like loading a gun. But then when they are away from their partner, that CRF floods into the brain.
And this CRF stops oxytocin production cold. Larry thinks it's maybe a naturally evolved kind of insurance policy. Animal mates, voles, and human have to spend time apart to forage for seeds or go to class or whatever. That CRF is part of what bums you out, makes you miss the other person and go back to them to get another fix of oxytocin.
Just like a heroin junkie or a cocaine junkie, when they go without their drug for a little while, they get a negative affect that brings them back to the drug.
So in voles, you can replace the drug, infuse oxytocin into the brain, and they're fine. But for humans, that doesn't really work. It's a more complicated problem. It's why Larry is careful to say bonds or bonding when talking voles. He doesn't call what they have love.
I think that love probably is fairly uniquely human, and that is our cortical capacity, our intellectual capacity, not only to feel that strong drive, but to really speak the language of romance, to think about the future, to think about abstract things.
Other animals experience the addiction, the drive of bonding. We humans make it into what Larry calls love by applying meaning to it. And we apply meaning to heartbreak, too.
We are also uniquely equipped to replay and ruminate on negative feelings over and over and over again.
That's Ethan Cross. He runs the Emotion and Self-Control Lab at the University of Michigan.
This process of turning over in your mind over and over and over again that negative experience, that can become a toxic process.
Thinking about how badly things had ended and how it could have gone differently.
Try to figure out when I messed up or like what I did that would make him not want to be with me.
Rumination has real health impacts. Everything from cardiovascular health to accelerated aging, because it's essentially chronic stress.
This really is how stress gets under the skin and hurts us, right? Like a stress reaction isn't bad per se. It's when we are experiencing stress chronically over and over and over and over again.
Ethan says heartbreak is a uniquely insidious stress response because it invites that replaying of events. If only I'd said this instead of that, how could I miss that sign? So to study heartbreak, he and his team designed an experiment that's kind of messed up.
And I should preface all of this to say that this sounds like we're torturing people. We're doing this stuff to learn more about how emotions and pain works to ultimately help people.
He put up posters seeking heartbroken individuals for brain study.
It was not hard to find participants with that ad in New York City.
About 40 of them.
They, on the whole, were quite jovial until they participated in the task, and that's where things turned a little bit less jovial.
The task? Look at pictures of your ex. Think about them. Think about the breakup.
So how did you feel in the precise moment where this other person told you they no longer want to be in a relationship with you?
This all happens as brain scans are being taken. The team also applies thermodes to each participant's skin. A thermode is basically a piece of metal that you can heat up electrically.
The sensation is akin to holding a hot cup of coffee from Starbucks without the sleeve, that protective sleeve that's on it.
It hurts, but doesn't harm you. They saw activity in the same brain region with both the hot metal and the ex's Instagram.
So if I pinch you, these parts of your brain becoming active, they're registering physical pain. Those were more active. Those were also active when people were experiencing social pain, thinking about a broken relationship.
He found love hurts, like physically. That was in 2011. Over the years, his lab has found a few ways to make it hurt less. Pay attention, lonely listeners. Up first, there's time travel.
Mental time travel.
Time heals all wounds, and Ethan says you can kind of speed it up in your head.
Telling people to imagine how they would feel in a year from now, rather than think about how they feel right now, that in itself is a little mental hack, if you will, psychological hack that can help improve the way people feel. It's called temporal distancing.
Another strategy is to talk about the breakup like it's happening to someone else, which kind of makes sense. Other people's breakups always seem melodramatic, right? Ethan says it's easy to think that way when it's not your breakup, when you didn't suffer what he calls the emotional assault.
When we experience those kinds of traumas or assault. An assault isn't a bad way to think about it. It's an emotional assault. Our attention narrows. So we devote our resources on a problem. Just like if we were going to battle and someone attacked us, we would devote all of our forces towards warding off that attack. When we're rejected, our attention zooms in. It narrows in on that problem, on that experience.
You get stuck in this attacked experience. Ethan calls it immersion. So you can't see, for instance, that there's plenty of fish in the sea. He hopes his research helps shift how we think about social pain, like heartbreak, and it seems to be working. I spoke with Guy Winch about this. He's a psychologist in New York, and he mentioned some of Ethan's research.
I think that when I asked therapists, how many of you got any training whatsoever on this condition?
This condition being heartbreak.
And what to do about it, No one did, and I didn't either. It's just not something we cover in schools, even though it's extremely common and extremely dramatic.
Guy's been working on filling that gap. He wrote a book about it, How to Fix a Broken Heart. He dove into the literature, looked for research like Ethan's and others, anything that touched on heartbreak. He learned about the physical pain of it, the ways it resembles and works like addiction. And to him, heartbreak also seemed quite a lot like grief.
Just in terms of what it looks like phenomenologically, it's a form of grief. It's what you see in other forms of grief and loss, whether you're losing a relative or a spouse or a partner.
But he calls heartbreak a kind of disenfranchised grief, even though it's like a loved one dying, even though it works like addiction, and even though it straight up physically hurts, we don't take it seriously.
So it's disenfranchised in that it's not something when if you have a relationship with somebody for 3 years, but you're not married and you're a 40-year-old executive, you're not going into work and saying to your boss or calling in and saying, I need a couple of days off, my boyfriend left me. It's just not a career move you would make. And yet you might not be able to function at all.
So part of the cure for a broken heart, he says, is taking heartbreak seriously. He tells patients they're not crazy when considering a cross-country last-ditch mission to get her back. They're in the throes of addiction. And that they're not acting like angsty teens when they can't go into the office without crying. They're grieving. He tells them this will pass. They'll find someone else, someone just as good, probably better.
In other words, you're not grieving Mr. or Mrs. Perfect. You're not grieving the perfect relationship that was happiness and bliss from morning till night, because that, A, doesn't exist. Certainly, if that were the case, then it wouldn't have been a breakup.
Larry Young, the guy who cures vole heartbreak with oxytocin infusion, he told me finding someone new, a new Mrs. or Mr. Perfect, is probably the best cure for humans, the old rebound.
Identify another partner that is going to start the whole process over again of releasing dopamine and oxytocin, and that's going to help sort of rewrite those neural circuits.
He knows from experience, after his first marriage fell apart, he was like one of his voles, floating listlessly in a beaker, too sad to swim.
I lived in a house with no furniture. I had like a lawn chair and a $25 television set, and you know, I was devastated.
Then enter her.
She studied the neural circuitry of male sexual behavior in rats.
He studied vole mating. She studied rat mating. Typical will they, won't they. It was at a conference in Italy.
It was just a romantic kind of thing, right? Capri's a small little island, you know, and there's the Blue Grotto and all these beaches with these nice rocks and everything.
The two of them pair bonded one night, as Larry put it, and they've been happily married since 2004. For The Pulse, I'm Jad Slaman.